I'm Brandi Cruz, and this is Politics Unpacked. Politics Unpacked is brought to you by our friends at Future 42, making Washington a place where all can prosper. Sign up for their newsletter at future42.org. Let's unpack week 8 of the legislative session.
We will not be taking action on 1579, 2114, 2065, and 1932.
Some key Democratic priorities failed to advance out of the Senate Ways and Means Committee this week. They include House Bill 2114, which would have instituted rent control, capping rent increases at 7%. Also failing to advance was House Bill 2065, which had to do with juvenile offenders. It would have said that points accrued for offenses committed while a juvenile will not follow someone into adulthood, even if they go on to commit violent crimes. Also failing to move forward was House Bill 1579, which would have strengthened independent prosecutions of police officers, and House Bill 1932, which would have moved all elections to even years only. State Senator Mark Mullett is a Democrat on the Ways and Means Committee. He says he didn't support any of those proposals, which made it difficult for Democrats to move them forward.
Your most important speech as an elected official is the arguments you make in private when people are really trying to decide whether they're going to support a bill or not. And so everything that happens in the committee or on the floor of the Senate, that at that point, if you have anxiety about legislation and you don't want it to become law, by the time you're voting on it in committee or on the floor of the Senate, that means you've already lost your arguments. Mm-hmm. And so I do try to go into those meetings with as much knowledge as humanly possible on the different topics to explain to my colleagues why I think these proposals might not be good for the average Washington resident. And I make those arguments. And, you know, it was, I think, in those cases on those bills, I think the arguments resonated. And it resonated because I think they have validity.
It's still not clear whether Democrats will have the support to get another controversial bill across the finish line, and that is the proposal to pay striking workers. House Bill 1893 would entitle striking workers to up to 4 weeks of unemployment benefits, the cost of which would be borne by their employer. For public school districts, that could mean that your local school would be on the hook for paying teachers if they go on strike. A bill that passed with bipartisan support this week was Senate Bill 6109, which would help protect kids from fentanyl abuse in the household, making it easier for a judge to decide that fentanyl abuse is cause to remove a child. Now, that bill passed, but not before emotional testimony from Republicans who were attempting to strengthen it.
There will be a patchwork of different decisions across jurisdictions and courts all across our state, because it will be left up to each individual judge to decide how much weight they want to put behind it. We need to have rebuttable presumption so that we can have the max protection for kids, Mr. Speaker, and I urge you to vote yes on this amendment because we need it more than anything.
I agree that parents have a right to parent their kids, but the state has a right to protect the children of this state from abuse and neglect, and putting fentanyl or any other kind of drugs in, around, near, or on a child is unconscionable. This amendment is essential to pass this bill. Please join me in voting yes for the thousands of kids around this state that cannot wait for protection.
And of course, we can't recap week 8 without talking about the hearings on those 3 Let's Go Washington initiatives.
Realistically, this initiative should be unnecessary, given that both constitutional precedent and the people have been very clear on multiple occasions. Washingtonians do not want an income tax. However, obviously, 450,000 people decided that they needed to make that message clear.
We need to work together to bring about the best solutions and perspectives from all sides, listening and learning from one another, and trusting parents to have access to important information that will help them support their own children.
The ideal is not to have to chase criminals to begin with, but when we've loosened our laws so much that criminals feel emboldened and empowered to act without concern for what the police will do, I believe that we'll have much more loss of life, loss of mobility, and much greater crime by not making it clear that certain activities are not acceptable within society.
Brian Haywood, who is the main backer of all of the initiatives, says he hopes next week the 3 that got hearings will be passed into law. The Seattle Times published an op-ed from Democratic leaders saying we're going to sign the parental rights initiative into law. I think that's happening on Monday, or they're going to pass it. It seems pretty likely they're going to do that to all 3. Do you agree?
I do. I heard from several people there yesterday that would be in the know that they think the likelihood of them passing all 3 is very high.
What do you believe is the strategy there? Because I can't imagine they enjoy doing it, but they've decided that they must. Why do you think that is?
So I think there's a couple of things. Number one is Well, you saw the sign-in. The police pursuit one was 96% for, like 3% against in the people that signed in. Even the income tax was high and the parental notification was very high. And I suspect that they have districts that they were worried about this, a non-red wave year becoming, unfortunately for them, a red wave year kind of risk that they had if they vote against. And these three in particular, I think, were so popular that they saw that as a risk.
For more on those hearings and what else happened in Olympia this week, let's check in with our friends at the Center Square. Brett Davis, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
I know, we're almost done.
I'm still shocked every time.
Yeah. So we are going to talk about two critical issues, one having to do with the hearings. We've highlighted what happened during each of the hearings, but in particular with the police pursuit hearing, some Republicans were not happy with the way it was ran. Why?
They were not. Well, there was a 1-hour public hearing before the, let me see if I get these committees right, the Senate Law and Justice Committee and the House Community Safety, Justice and Reentry Committee. It was a 1-hour hearing. I wasn't there myself, but intrepid reporter Carlene Johnson was there at the Capitol, and she said and reported in her story that testimony didn't actually begin until about 30 minutes into the meeting or hearing because of staff briefings and Democrats were asking questions. So, and then, you know, they did get some people to speak, but, you know, Chair Monica Dinger, after she adjourned the meeting, there were like audible gasps from the audience because people were upset that a lot of people didn't get to testify. Senator Linda Wilson, after the meeting, basically called it a sham. She asked, you know, why did we allow in remote testimony from a professor from New York when we had a room full of people, standing room only, who wanted to testify in person? Why weren't they given priority? There were the people that were signed in, not everyone was going to speak. There were 5,300 people who were in favor of the legislation and 177 against.
Yeah. And so obviously not everyone was going to have their say, but to, like you said, go bring in on Zoom a professor from New York, well, you've got constituents in the flesh who want to share their thoughts on it. I can see why that might have rubbed people the wrong way.
I was surprised that the hearing was only set for 1 hour. I would think something that generated so much interest and people were obviously wanted to have their say would get, you know, maybe 2 hours, but maybe that's just me being too optimistic.
Maybe a little too optimistic. All right, one other bill I want to talk about. We've discussed it on Undivided previously, but it sounds like it's now passed in the Senate. House Bill 2118, which some firearms dealers are calling a death sentence for them.
Right. I've heard it referred to as the FFL killer, of course, referring to federal firearms license. An amended version of that bill, it passed the Senate, so it'll eventually have to go back to the House to see if they want to concur with those changes. But basically, it requires, gun dealers to have annual background checks on their employees, carry $1 million in liability insurance, install steel doors and bars on their buildings, and more stringent requirements in terms of video surveillance. That was kind of the big hang up a lot of people had. Now, the amendments that the Senate passed, they changed it from the House version, which would require maintaining, if you can believe this, 730 days of surveillance video. They changed that to, in the Senate version, to 90 days at the point of sale and firearm storage areas and 45 days at other locations. As you can imagine, people running gun stores say this is going to put, you know, a crimp on us financially. It's going to cost a lot of money to do this. So.
Yeah, and there's a concern that that's sort of a roundabout way of getting them to close down, just making it so financially not feasible for them to operate. I remember watching this being debated in committee, and I think at one point, originally, it was 6 years of video surveillance they wanted them to store.
6 years.
And that costs a lot of money for that much space. And so it's good to see it's been amended down, but clearly some real concerns from firearms dealers that this is going to put them out of business. Brett, so we have one more episode of Politics Unpacked. Next week, and we'll be doing kind of a recap of the big takeaways. So you and I will both look less stressed next
week,
so I
think. Maybe by then they'll actually maybe voted on some of these initiatives. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, because they're about out of time, and they've said they're going to, at least on parental rights. And so we'll see what happens, and we'll have
an update. They like to wait till the last second, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do. Drama. They like to keep us watching until the end of the session.
Right.
Brett Davis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been Politics Unpacked for this 8th week of the legislative session. Have a great weekend. Politics Unpacked is brought to you by our friends at Future 42, making Washington a place where all can prosper. Sign up for their newsletter at future42.org. To support Undivided and our content like this, you can subscribe for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com.